Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 85 of Season 7 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Film Cast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you, Rob. Here to finish off the week.
So, Minute 85 begins with Simon getting an idea. And ends with John getting out of the truck. So we ended things yesterday with Targo getting very, very pissed off at Simon. And he walks away. And this minute begins with a shot on Simon's face. And then Simon goes, "Stop. Targo, Targo." And he goes, "Here, come here." And, you know, Simon at this point has decided what he's going to do. He goes into the car, and we now can definitely see that it is raining. We can verify that, you know, at this juncture, you know, there is rain happening where Simon and his men are. And he pulls out the briefcase from the car. Now, how does Simon know that the briefcase is in the car?
You got me.
I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about Rolf, who is Kira Sedgwick's brother, you know, Rob Sedgwick. And, you know, he wouldn't let the guy next to him, you know, leave the bomb on the street because there could be kids around here, even though they're about to blow up a school. But, you know, there could be kids there. And... So Simon somehow knows that it's here. He's been updated. You know, obviously things have happened that we don't get to see. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how quickly he goes and walks over to this car, opens the door, and just pulls out, you know, the bomb. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess from that perspective.
Yeah, and he kind of handles it in a way too that I'm thinking, well, if you know that's a bomb in the briefcase, I'd do it a little more gingerly. I mean, he practically shoves it into Targo, and it's like, you know, everybody else is being so careful about these bombs everywhere in the city. You know, we can't let them mix. You know, we can't jostle them. And he just goes, "We blow the dam," and shoves it at him.
I do agree with you. It's a little strange the way that he does that. But hey, he's got an idea. I think that's what it comes down to. You know, why not? Might as well just, you know, blow the dam.
Yep.
And then he goes, "We blow the dam." And Turbo looks at him and goes, "What?" Like, what the hell are you talking about? Where'd you come up with that idea?
Oh, you know, it's standard villain playbook type of thing. If there's a dam, you got to blow it up. You know?
It's true. And, I mean, basically... At this point, you know, Simon has resolved the fact that he's got to get rid of John at some point, you know, finally having to do this. You know, and I love the way he holds the briefcase. It's as if this is something that is so, it's feather light, you know, or maybe it's trying to show that Simon is just very strong.
No, my guess is that the briefcase is actually empty. So I think what we're seeing is the actual flopping around of an empty briefcase.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons. Think that he would, you know, act it better, just like Zeus acted better when he was lifting up the piece of, you know, the thing of gold.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that empty cup syndrome thing. It's like how when you're watching movies and TV shows and someone's sitting there sipping on a coffee, you can always tell when the cup is actually empty because they just, you know, you can tell that they're not really, you know, making it look like there's any weight to it. And plus, half the time you hear the sound effect of it, you know, like clunk down on the table and you go, "Well, that cup was empty."
Right, but there are actors who are able to pull it off.
It's an advanced skill. You know, you'd think Jeremy Irons, an Academy Award winning actor, has this skill, but apparently not.
Not in this scene. That's for sure not.
No.
Right. And so the way that you know, this is the way he convinces Targo to do it, you know. And then we see Targo run in with a whole bunch of his men, And they actually look really funny because they're all there with their guns and, as if they're doing a tactical check or something like that.
Yeah, like
the, exactly.
Yeah, like there in the Blues Brothers. Yeah.
I knew where you were talking about that from.
And it's a good thing all those lights are still there too, because that way they can see what they're doing. All those lights we talked about yesterday, which almost look like they've doubled, to be honest with you.
Right. Now, I actually have a very good point about, we talked the other day about the fact that there was theoretically water seeping through the dam.
Right.
But maybe this is actually rain coming in.
It could be, I guess.
Because the way that it's falling on them does not look as if it's, coming out of. We do see that the dam wood is wet, but it looks like there's water coming down on them as they're running into the room. From that space.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Right.
Again, maybe it's just splashing out from a hole that wasn't plugged up properly. That could be too.
Yeah. They ran out of little kids to sit there and stick their fingers in the dam to keep it from leaking.
Isn't there what's the name of that character that does that little?
Yeah, I was trying to remember that. It's some kind of a Dutch fairy tale or something like that. I don't remember.
Something like that with the finger in the dam. It's the little Dutch boy. Okay.
I just brought it up here too. The little Dutch boy or Hans Brinker.
That's right. No, he's featured in the novel Hans Brinker. Yeah, that's the name of the story.
Well, this is. Oh, okay. Well, this is an AI answer, so AI doesn't always know what
it's a story about. A Dutch boy who saves his country by putting his finger in a leaking dike. The boy stays there all night in spite of the cold until the villagers find him and repair the dike.
If earlier he could have done that instead.
He could have, but he didn't. For some reason, they didn't want him to do that. They should have given him a better option. With German guards to start sticking their fingers in all the holes there.
Yeah, but they want to blow the thing up, so they're not going to stick their fingers in the hole.
Yeah, but there's maybe just for the point of time that he's, doing this, he's setting up the bomb there.
So that they don't get wet while they're setting up the bomb. Okay.
That's right.
Sure.
That's right. And like, one of them climbs up one of the what are those called?
There's
RoboSketch. What were those things called? They look like
it's like some kind of a
bee. No, there. But they look like what were they called? It was a building thing that we had when we were kids.
Oh,
where they look like this.
I can't think of it. I know what you're talking about. I can picture it in my mind, but I can't think of the name.
For some reason, the Etch-a-Sketch keeps popping into my mind. I know it's not that, but it's.
Are you thinking like Erector Set? Is that what you're
Erector
thinking
Set. There you go. There you go.
There we go. Yes. Yeah.
That's right. So they look like Erector Set pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Targo is like standing on his tippy toes. As one of the guys climbs up the Erector Set, and we see that Targo hands him the briefcase, the empty briefcase.
I don't know that he really needed to climb up there to put the briefcase there. I mean, if the bomb is as powerful as we're led to believe it is, seems like you could just set it on the floor and you'd be good.
Yeah, probably. No, but maybe they wanted it to be in a key spot that is going to, for sure, blow the dam.
Right.
More
dramatic this way.
That would be my guess. And then the shot changes where we're back in Chester A. Arthur, the fake Chester A. Arthur. We're back in the Humboldt. That's right. We're back in the
Humboldt.
The Alexander Humboldt Elementary School. And at this point, Connie comes into the basement and she calls to Cobb and says, Walter. And then the shot changes and Lambert is standing there. And do you see that there's a whole group of cops that are just running by and firemen and stuff like that? They just have them in the background running by to make things look busier than they really are.
Uh-huh.
And then Lender points at a refrigerator and goes, take a look at this. The janitor said this one was delivered this morning. About 10:30, right? And the guy shakes his head and he goes, not hooked up. And he goes, yeah. Okay, now take a look at the front. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the janitor here. So the actor who plays the janitor, his name is Ray Aranha. He had 25 IMDb credits. He was born in 1939 and passed away in 2011 at the age of 72, which means that 54.
Oh, okay. So just a year older than I am.
does he look like your age, or would you suspect that he's older?
I'd say older.
Yeah,
but
no, I would agree. That's the same idea. And the only interesting thing that I could find out about him, I mean, none of the movies that he were in was really anything that stands out or his part stood out. The one thing I found that was interesting on IMDb, it's listed that he was married twice and both of his wives were named Jean. You know, it's the only...
Well, I guess he's got a type.
Apparently. he's got a type that starts with a J. You know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I love how Lambert pulls out the plug to show us, you know, that it's just not connected.
Well, yeah, it's like, it's not only not connected, but it's got like all these other like random wires, you know, snaking out of it. Yeah. Like it was cut in some kind of a violent way or something like that. But also, I mean, again, you know, when you're looking at a movie minute by minute like this, you know, you start tuning into things in a way that you didn't before. And, you know, part of me is always like, well, shouldn't that have been like the first question that the cops would have had coming to school? You know, were there any, you know, like deliveries today? Was there anything unusual that happened today? Any visitors that you wouldn't normally have at the school today? Well, yeah, this guy delivered this refrigerator. Well, that would be a logical place to start looking, you know, but apparently it didn't occur to them to ask that question.
Well, because they must have known that a refrigerator was coming, and that's a standard thing. We needed, you know, we got a huge refrigerator today. We didn't know if we needed to order it or not, but we got one.
Well, but here's the thing too. And again, looking at this with a keener eye than I normally would, it's a little bit obscured because it kind of runs off the side of the frame.
That's the next thing. That was the next thing I was going to talk about. Yes.
Yeah. It looks like they've already put a badge on there that says property of New York City school
of education,
or something like that.
The Department of Education, New York City. That's right. So the question is whether they put it there or, you know, it was delivered with that to try to sell it even more. The fact that this is real.
It comes from a Board of Education warehouse where they already have those. Yeah, it's weird.
Well, it's probably because where they filmed it, this probably was a real refrigerator that was sitting there. That would be my guess.
Exactly.
You know, we got a real refrigerator there. So, and it's property of the Department of Education in New York City. Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then that works.
And now this film crew comes along and they're going to drill the hinges.
That's right. Now, do you, at what temperature do you keep your refrigerator on?
Oh, don't ask me that question. I don't remember. I mean, I first of all, my wife is the one that sets that because she is very clued into that. And I also know the fridge that we have now, which we've only had for about a year and a half, does have a nice bright LED little display there on the inside that tells what temperature it is. But if you ask me to remember what exactly it says right now, I could not tell you. Even though I opened that thing 20 times a day.
At this point, we will hear Todd scream, Amy!
Yeah.
What's the temperature on the fridge?
And take a look. Yeah.
Do you think? Okay, so I'll ask it differently. Do you think 42 degrees Fahrenheit is the appropriate setting for a refrigerator?
I know it. I know that 40 something is, but I couldn't tell you if it was 42.
Right. Okay. So 42 is slightly above where it should be. Okay. The optimal temperature range for perishable foods is anywhere between 37 and 41 degrees Fahrenheit, which for those outside of America, that's 3 to 5 degrees Celsius centigrade. The FDA recommends that you keep the refrigerator at or below 4 degrees, which is 40 degrees centigrade, which is 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and that the freezer should either be at minus 18 degrees centigrade or zero Fahrenheit. Now, I know my freezer is minus 18. That I do know. I honestly don't remember what my, because here it's in centigrade. So I don't know what, you know, how cold my refrigerator is. I would think it's probably around 4.
When you said like 37, I was going to say, I think that might be what ours says, because I seem to remember it ending in a 7. But again, I couldn't recall off the top of my head.
Okay, right. So it's around the right range. You know, but you'd think that the janitor, when they got this refrigerator delivered, would have gone and plugged it in. I mean, I know that you're supposed to wait a few hours before you plug it in after things get moved, or is he waiting for someone to properly hook it up or something like that?
Well, and you also got to admire Simon's attention to detail, that they would make it so that it displayed a temperature on the front, even though it's in. I mean, that's, you know, right. He's all in on this.
Well, that we know. You know, that there's no question about that. That Simon is definitely all in for this.
Well, and given what we know down the line about this particular bomb, I mean, he definitely paid attention to detail in this case. I don't want to spoil things, but you know.
Well, it won't spoil if it's anywhere between 37 and 41. So.
I set you up on that one, Rob. I hope you appreciate it.
I do. You did a nice job with that. You see, we work well together, Todd.
Yeah.
Right. So at this point, Charlie takes control and screams, "We drill the hinges. Get everyone out." What does he mean, though, about get everyone out? I mean, they have to keep everyone in the school. Is he saying everyone get out of the room? Because if the refrigerator blows up with everything in it, it doesn't matter how far away these people are. If they're in the vicinity of the school, they're toast.
The comeback should have been get everyone out of what? You mean the island of Manhattan? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. For sure. So at this point, the shot changes again, and we see a truck driving driving through the aqueduct, and then the truck stops, and we see John get out holding his gun. It's a good thing that John noticed Plank had fallen down, because that's why he stopped.
Yeah, I thought he had a good eye to actually see that. Because I don't know that I would have been looking for it.
And then he admires the bullet holes in the side of the truck. And then he starts walking towards, I don't even know if he's walking, he's trotting towards the area, you know, where the plank has fallen, and then that's where the minute ends.
See, if you mentioned this, and so I'm thrilled to get to fill there the name of a business on the side of the truck.
Thur and Samson. It's not even Thor.
Yeah, Thur and Samson, like Earth movers. Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a case where folks on the crew have put their names into the movie. And I used to love looking for these things in movies. There was a time where I would sit there and watch a movie and I'd like write down all the names in the opening credits to see if I, you know, spotted or heard that name somewhere in the movie itself, to see if these people snuck themselves into the movie in some way. And this is one of those cases where you have Pamela Thur, Thur, and Robin F. Samson, who were part of the locations department on this movie. And They put their names there on the side of this truck.
You see, when I looked at it, I didn't even think to go in that direction because I said to myself, this is like Thor and Samson. So these are, you know, two Herculean people who, you know, legitimately could be Earth movers. You know, that was what went through my mind. I didn't check as to whether it was a real company or not. And I definitely didn't think about the fact. I just figured that they missed, you know, they misspelled Thor. That's it.
Well, this is going by IMDb trivia, which, you know, I know there's a lot of folks that contributed to that, especially back in the 90s and such, like I was, where I was looking for these type of things in movies. So I didn't go through and verify it and all that. I'm trusting what IMDb trivia says. But according to them, these are the names
That's very
of
cool.
the crew members.
Excellent. Thank you for bringing it up. You see, you do have what to contribute here, Todd. You never should never think that you don't. I know you do. I know you do.
I try.
You know, and I'm glad that you bring that forward. All right. So let's go into the script where we have a little bit here. So it starts off with Simon saying, "Don't underestimate me, Matthias. The aqueduct is sealed with a concrete retaining wall supported with steel girders. Beyond the retaining wall is a wall of water. Simon's convoy pulls up in front of the retaining wall. To the left is a construction vehicle and exit ramp leading up to ground level. Simon and Targo get out of their truck. Targo says, he'll be here in minutes. What are you going to do? Simon thinks a minute. He looks at the retaining wall, holding back the water from the rest of the wall. At that point, it then skips slightly because there's like a little paragraph with Zeus. And then we go back and then it says the retaining wall of the aqueduct tunnel. The dump trucks are exiting the tunnel up the construction vehicle exit ramp. Targo finishes rigging the retaining wall and pull up the exit ramp. Targo's dump truck comes up to a ramped street level, joining the other dump trucks. Targo nods to Simon, who removes the transmitter detonator from his pocket. So that's the way they end that here. I like the way they do it in the movie a little better. I mean, there is the difference in the script. They don't have the explosive mixture. They only have C4 the entire time.
Ah. And they don't reference the briefcase here either.
No.
They just say C4. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yep. They didn't need to do anything else there. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Name That Movie, where the idea behind this segment is that this movie's original title was Simon Says. So it got me thinking about the fact that there are many movies that the release title is not the original title.
Yes.
So I went and made a list of 155 movies that have different original titles than their release titles. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the name of the original title and the year of the movie, and you have to try and guess what the release title is. Okay. Now you do have lifelines. You do have lifelines. You can choose a director. You can choose an actor or another actor, things like that. Okay. So I'm just going to give you the year of the movie and the name of the original title of the film.
Okay. All right. And am I limited on the lifelines or I can just.
No, you're not limited. Not at all.
Okay. And how many of these do I have to do again?
Five.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one from 2006, Route 66.
2006, Route 66. I think I'll need a lifeline. Let me take an actor then.
Let's go with Paul Newman.
Oh, Cars.
Very good.
Yeah, that suddenly clicked there. Makes sense.
Right. Okay, the next one's I'm throwing a softball to you. 1987, okay. S. Morgenstern's classic tale of true love and high adventure.
Oh, well, that's The Princess Bride.
Yes. I figured I would give you that one.
Yeah.
I know you're a fan, so why not?
Who isn't?
That is true. Come on. That is true. Okay, 1988. When I Grow Up.
That sounds like it might be Big.
And it is. Very good.
Cool.
Okay, 1979, Heart of Darkness.
Oh, well, that's Apocalypse Now.
So you see, I guess I should have gone with the harder ones for you.
Well, it's based on the novel, yeah. Heart of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the documentary about the making of Apocalypse Now is called Hearts of Darkness.
Correct. Yes. Okay, and the final one. This one might be a little more difficult for you, which I hope. 2012, The Bear and the Bow.
Oh. Oh, Rob. Remember how I said that we do trivia every night at the dinner table? Well, yes. This actually came up. We had a set of Disney cards, and this came up in that in our nightly trivia. The Bear and the Bow is Brave.
Yes, it is. Wow, that is great. Excellent, Todd.
I'm going to tell my wife that, because she'll get a kick out of it, because that question came up literally like two nights ago, and it was her question, and she was like, I can't remember this. And I was like, we actually had this on another set of cards a couple of weeks ago. And she's like, really? I was like, yes. So, you know, this answer. And she couldn't come up with it. And
so I think what you need to tell her is that, you know, she needs to listen to more podcasts.
Yeah. Well, she is the one that does all those trivia podcasts. So, yeah.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Todd. That was great. You know, very impressive. Very impressive.
Always fun. Always fun to be.
All right. So, Todd, would you like for one final time this week to tell people where they can find Todd Liebenow?
Yeah. So the podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. Find that wherever you find your podcasts. The blog is Forgotten Films, which is forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. I haven't said it on the other ones, but I'm on other things too. Forgotten Films. We've got a Facebook group on there, so you can look for that. I'm a big supporter of Letterboxd. I love being able to log my movies on Letterboxd. So if you're on that platform, look for me on there as well.
Yeah, I'm there, but I only have like 100 movies listed on there. So, because, you know, I mean, I only have like 10,000 that I've seen, you know, something like that. And I'm not exaggerating.
That's the thing.
For me to go back and put them all in is just crazy.
Oh, you wouldn't believe how easy it is actually to do that, and how much fun it is. When I, you know, got on there, I was kind of like, you know, well, this is cool, but I don't know how much effort I'm going to put into it. And then one weekend many years ago, I like sat down and just started clicking. Yep, I've seen that. I've seen that. I've seen that. I've seen that. I started adding. You know, next thing I know, you know, I've got tons and tons there. I'm getting very close to where I will have my 10,000th on there. I'm sure there are other movies that I've just haven't remembered to click on there, especially when it comes to like shorts and things. Like I am very religious about, like, I'm not just logging feature films. I also log like classic animated shorts. Three Stooges shorts, okay. Little Rascals shorts, and all those things I used to watch as a kid. And so, you know, I'm sure there are like Looney Tunes cartoons that I've seen that I haven't logged yet, just because I don't remember all the details and whatnot. But my goal is, you know, by the end of this year, I will officially be at 10,000 things I've logged watching on Letterboxd. So I'm within a couple hundred, so I'm getting close.
Okay, see, for me, I keep it on IMDb. So on my IMDb page, I have 9,672 movies so far that are listed. So it's I guess, actually, is there a way to export it to?
I don't know. I'm not sure if there is or not. I know there are some connections between IMDb and Letterboxd, but I'm not exactly.
Because that would make it much easier.
And like, you get different features. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So if you figure that out, let me know.
No, I have a lot of fun with Letterboxd.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. Todd, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thank you. I always enjoy it.
Me too. Always do. I look forward to hopefully having you back again next season when I decide what movie I'm going to do. You know, maybe I'll even find something that you've never seen. You know, who knows?
It works for me.
I'll do my best. I'll do my best. I mean, we're both at 10,000, so I don't know. It might be a little more difficult, but we'll figure something out. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out. And we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.